The Vice District of New Orleans would become known as Storyville in 1897, a district where prostitution and gambling were legalized in the city. But before the legendary tales of madams and jazz musicians who would become famous during Storyville's heyday, there was Kate Townsend, a famous Vice District madam whose mysterious past would become front page news when Kate was discovered murdered in her home in 1883. This is the mystery of the murder at the Bordello. This is Southern Mysteries. It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight, and I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right. All right. Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring historical mysteries and legendary figures of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. New Orleans is a city that just makes you feel free. There's no what happens here stays here mentality. Everything's just out in the open. That laid-back and easygoing attitude has attracted countless artists, independent thinkers, and entrepreneurs to the Big Easy, where they could take risk and be who they are. New Orleans has always been the place where you just do things your own way. That was true for a district in the city that was just behind the French Quarter, along Basin Street, between Canal Street and St. Louis Cemetery No. 1. The district was known as Storyville from 1897 until 1917. Storyville was the designated red light district of New Orleans. Brothels and bar rooms had been popular in the district since the 1850s. But in 1897, a New Orleans alderman, Sidney Story, proposed an ordinance making prostitution legal in what was then known as the Vice District. Story's proposal was intended to control prostitution, even worked to reduce the number of brothels, maintaining that if it was legal in one district, it would be easier to make some reforms. But his effort took a turn he never expected. The ordinance passed and would go into effect in January of 1898, and the district would become known by locals as Storyville, a tongue-in-cheek reference to the man who was trying to control the district and business ventures. As you can imagine, Story wasn't impressed, but the reference remained. Storyville became one of the most notorious vice districts in the country. When the city chose to acknowledge brothels and make prostitution legal in that district, it expanded. More and more entrepreneurs would come to the district to open bars and brothels that they could openly promote. Storyville enticed visitors from the city and from out of town who were drawn to some of the most infamous brothels in America. Some of those brothels were inside fine old mansions on North Basin Street in the more affluent side of the district, but patrons could also find along the back streets of the district 25-cent brothels and saloons and dance halls. Whether on North Basin Street or on the back streets, the brothels and dance halls had one thing in common: music. They all hired musicians to entertain patrons, which led to Storyville becoming known as the birthplace of jazz in the early 20th century. Storyville would come to an end a little over a century ago, in 1917, when America entered World War I. The city tried to keep the district open, but the federal government ordered that no brothel or vice district could operate within 5 to 10 mile zones around their training camps. They were preparing soldiers for war. They wanted them focused. On November 12, 1917, Storyville was closed. By the 1940s, the district would be leveled when the city deemed it a slum clearance project. Of the 360 structures that made up Storyville, only three remain today. But the stories and legends of the district do remain, including the murder of one of the most notorious madams in the Vice District in the years before it would become known as Storyville. Kate Townsend was born in Ireland around 1833 or 1838. Her real date of birth remains unknown because her true identity is still shrouded in mystery. Her real name is believed to have been Bridget Cunningham. We don't know why, but around 1850, she left her Irish home and went to Liverpool, England. Her family would never see her again. When Bridget arrived in Liverpool, she met a dashing sailor named Peter Kernahan. They met when Bridget saved him from being beaten during a brawl in a dance hall. The two connected and had an intense relationship. She would become pregnant, and when Peter heard of the pregnancy, he left town. Bridget was left to deal with the shame of being an unwed mother after giving birth to twins. Peter returned to Liverpool and was met by Bridget, who promptly beat him up and forced him to face the police and admit what he had done. Peter would serve 6 months in jail, but Bridget was shamed, her reputation beyond repair. She made the decision to start over, which meant abandoning her twins in Liverpool. She sailed to New York and ended up in New Orleans in 1857. The woman who arrived in New Orleans would no longer be known as Bridget Cunningham. She took a new name, calling herself Kate Townsend. She didn't know how to read or write, knew no one in the city, so Kate's options to make a living were limited. Kate Townsend went to work as a prostitute in the Vice District, working for a madam named Clara Fisher. Kate was considered quite beautiful, with a full figure that made her desirable in her line of work. Kate made nice with men like Travell Egbert Sykes, who everyone called Bill Sykes. He was from a well-respected family in New Orleans, but he had a rebellious streak and had trouble with his family, had a falling out. Maybe that's how Kate and Bill connected, moved from a professional relationship to a more intimate relationship in later years. Kate worked for Clara Fisher for 6 months before she made a move to Maggie Thompson's Custom House on Canal Street. Maggie's clientele were a little wealthier, more prominent in the city, which meant more money for Kate, who remained in high demand at Maggie's place until she set out on her own. Maggie's house would be the last place Kate worked as a prostitute. Kate Townsend was smart, and once she set her mind on something, she was ambitious enough to make it happen. Kate was adored by her clients, who were more than willing to give her money to lease her own custom house in 1863. Kate was in her mid-20s and running her own brothel that catered to city officials and politicians, who helped her open the house and recommended Kate and her girls to their friends. Within a few years, the powerful friends fronted the money for Kate to move her operation to a marble mansion at number 40 Basin Street. Investors paid to furnish the mansion in grand style with black walnut furniture, white marble, and a theme of velvet and gold throughout the home. In the end, the bill to decorate and furnish the home was about $200,000. $40,000 of that money was used to decorate the first floor, which would be Kate's home. Kate was known as a protective madam, a woman who insisted the 15 to 20 women who worked for her were treated well. In return, she made sure each girl had a day off each week. When they were on the job, Kate's girls had to conduct themselves as ladies. They were never allowed to use vulgar or obscene language in public, and they were always dressed in fine evening gowns. These standards and Kate's reputation led to her girls being among the most expensive in New Orleans. Kate was also very particular about the gentlemen she allowed to enter number 40 Basin Street. Kate had her established clientele, but was always open to new business. When an interested party arrived at the door, he would be met by an usher who would lead him into a drawing room where he would be interviewed by Kate. If the man caused any question or concern, Kate handled things, promptly throwing the man out. But if he passed the interview process, he would be allowed to meet her girls, buy them champagne, and then pay $15 for an evening with a woman he desired. The first 6 years of business for Kate, it was everything she hoped for, everything her investors hoped for, a constant stream of wealthy men who were more than willing to spend a lot of money at number 40 Basin Street. But following the Civil War, politics and power shifted in the city. Some men who invested in Kate's business and helped it expand saw their prosperity and power decrease during Reconstruction. Kate was forced to make some changes, lower her standards. She didn't spend as much time interviewing men and lowered her rates. The money was still flowing, but it was coming from a lower class of clientele. Something that would be noted in the Times-Picayune in 1870 when a fight broke out between two men just outside of Kate's place. Gus Taney and Jim White had been gambling and were already on edge when they entered number 40 Basin Street. They argued over a bottle of wine. Taney pulled out a revolver as Jim White attacked him, but he wouldn't be quick enough. Jim White stabbed Gus Taney with a 9-inch Bowie knife. Taney tried to run from the house as Kate followed him to see if she could help. As she reached him, he collapsed, and Kate saw that she was covered in blood. Police would later give Kate Townsend the murder weapon, a sort of keepsake from the event. Kate would keep the knife on her person at all times, even slept with that Bowie knife under her pillow at night. That knife would be the weapon used to kill Kate Townsend. Taney's death inside Kate's mansion did not help business. It was in all the local papers, which didn't help her reputation. Kate's health suffered when she turned to alcohol to try to calm her nerves. The alcohol brought out Kate's darker side. Her temper flared, and she would drink to try to deal with all that was happening. Her longtime lover, Bill Sykes, had moved into number 40 Basin Street to help with the business and take care of the books when he fell on hard times in 1878. Kate and Bill's relationship had begun soon after she arrived in New Orleans, and some considered Kate and Bill to be common law spouses, although the two lived in separate rooms in the mansion. Bill and Kate had an unstable and at times violent relationship, which became more violent when Bill moved into Kate's home. Kate claimed that Bill was jealous of her success, jealous of the men who desired her and wanted to be with her. Kate's health had declined by the late 1870s, and what was assumed to be a glandular condition led to her gaining a significant amount of weight. She was well over 300 pounds by then. Bill would tell Kate she needed to take better care of herself, that her weight gain would cause business to suffer. But Kate's clients and her business associates never stopped coming to see Kate. One told a local paper that her bust was one of the greatest sights in the city of New Orleans, a sight a man named McClern wanted to see when he pursued Kate Townsend in 1883. By October of that year, the relationship between Kate Townsend and Bill Sykes was spiraling out of control. Sykes was beaten by Kate when he refused to do something she ordered him to do. Police would be called, both of them would be arrested, and then sleep off their anger, tell cops they wouldn't press charges against each other, that all was well. When Kate hired Sykes to help with the books at the brothel, it had been because Kate couldn't read or write. Bill used this to his advantage when he forged her signature on several checks, stealing around $7,000 from Kate. She had him arrested, but again refused to press charges. Kate Townsend and Bill Sykes would both become heavy drinkers, and Sykes took to smoking opium. The house Kate had once taken pride in labeling one of the priciest in the Vice District was falling apart. A third party entered the picture that October, a young man named McClern, who was obsessed with Kate. Kate was taken in by his charm and allowed him to move in, showered him with money and affection. Bill Sykes vowed he would not be replaced. He stood up to Kate, telling her McClern had to go. He tried to throw him out of the house, punching and kicking McClern, but Kate protected the young man and ended up in a brawl with Sykes. The two would once again be arrested for disturbing the peace. After being released, the two returned home and fought every single day. One of the servants in Kate's house, Molly Johnson, would later testify that the day after Sykes tried to throw McClern out of the house, Kate was in the kitchen with her when she picked up a butcher knife and offhandedly mentioned that she might just open Bill's belly with it. Molly realized Kate still had the knife in her hand when Bill entered the kitchen, and she begged her not to do it. Kate explained to Molly that she wouldn't be killing Bill that day. She just planned to beat the hell out of him. She grabbed a breadboard and proceeded to beat him until he ran from the room. On November 2nd, 1883, Kate Townsend and her servant Molly Johnson went to a bar on Canal Street with McClern and one of his friends. The four would drink heavily into the early morning hours. McClern took the brunt of Kate's temper as she beat him at the bar until he fought back. But when Kate pulled out her treasured Bowie knife, McClern backed down. Kate was still drunk and angry as she and Molly walked home. Kate had once again threatened to open Bill's belly. Molly Johnson ran ahead to the house to warn Bill Sykes that Kate was in one of her violent fits again. Sykes locked himself in his room that night. When Kate couldn't find Bill, she went to her room to sleep off her hangover. The next morning, Molly Johnson and the housekeeper, Marie Philomene, heard Bill Sykes and Kate Townsend fighting upstairs in Kate's bedroom. Molly tried to break up the fight by entering Kate's room to offer her coffee and breakfast. When Molly was told to leave the room, Bill Sykes closed the door and locked it behind her. Molly and Marie stood in the hallway outside of Kate's room and heard Bill and Kate shouting and arguing again. They heard things escalate with glass shattering and more things being thrown around the room. They heard Kate Townsend shrieking and yelling, and then silence. Molly and Marie were still standing in the hallway when Bill Sykes opened the door and emerged from Kate's room. They were horrified when they saw that Bill's clothes were covered in blood. They asked what he had done, what had happened. Sykes replied that Kate was gone. He had to do it. He then turned around, walked up the stairs to his room, and closed his door. Molly and Marie were terrified, could barely believe what Sykes had told them. They ran into Kate Townsend's room, and to their horror, they found her lying on her bed, covered in blood. The Times-Picayune would share details of the gruesome murder of Kate Townsend and the chaos as officers arrived at the bordello, writing that officers Clark and Hormel were walking along Basin Street when they heard such an uproar from the house that they ran to the scene. Molly and Marie told the officers what had happened, how Sykes had told them he had to do it. Officer Clark found Bill Sykes in his room. A room that was in disarray with blood-stained and torn clothing lying near Bill Sykes. He explained to the officer that he had changed his clothes and was prepared to go to the police station to surrender. As Officer Clark took him into custody, Sykes kept saying over and over again, he had to do it. Bill would tell police that he went into Kate's room and they had fought. After Molly entered with coffee and breakfast, Kate was calm for a minute, but then she became enraged and attacked him with the knife she kept under her pillow. He was able to get the knife away, but she came for him again, attacking him with a pair of scissors. Bill swore to police that he fought back and killed Kate in self-defense. The news of the murder of Kate Townsend spread like wildfire. The lead detective on the case, Sergeant Grabe, had to call in help to deal with a large crowd that had gathered outside of the brothel. Once inside, he searched for the murder weapon. He caught a glimpse of it when he looked out the window of Kate's room and saw a red sheath. A 9-inch Bowie knife would be found nearby, along with a pair of pruning shears. He assumed these were the scissors Bill Sykes had referred to when he confessed to the murder. When the coroner arrived at the house, he had to work his way through a crowd of men and women who were inside Kate Townsend's house, some in her room with her bloody corpse. They told police and the doctor that they wanted to see the autopsy that was about to be performed. Frustrated police had to clear the house. Two doctors would be present for the autopsy, and a jury of five men were impaneled for the coroner's inquest. The doctors found Kate Townsend had been stabbed 11 times, three wounds to her left lung, heart, and large blood vessels had been the fatal stabs. Once the jury agreed on a verdict of death by hemorrhage, Kate's body was transported to the undertaker to begin preparations for burial. Kate Townsend's will was found in her room, and it made her final wishes for a wake and funeral clear. Kate wanted no man to lay eyes on her corpse and demanded that no man take part in her funeral. Molly Johnson managed all of Kate's final wishes. She arranged for Kate to be laid out for viewing in the drawing room of number 40 Basin Street, dressed in a $600 silk gown. She only allowed 40 women to view Kate's body, including current and former employees of Kate Townsend. More women were allowed to join in Kate's wake that included expensive champagne, wine, and food. A hearse took Kate's body to Metairie Cemetery, followed by a procession of 20 carriages. Just as Kate had wished, no men were a part of the funeral procession. Kate Townsend's estate and the murder trial of Bill Sykes would become front page news. When Kate's will was read, it estimated her fortune to be around $90,000 and ordered that her entire estate go to Bill Sykes, who would also be the executor of the will. The law made it clear that Sykes couldn't inherit the estate because he was accused of murdering Kate Townsend. He could only take possession of the money and house if he was found not guilty. But he could legally move forward as the will's executor. There was no law preventing him from that right. That decision was protested when an attorney named Thomas Rozier came forward and claimed he was acting on behalf of Kate Townsend's absent heirs, heirs he could not name or present in court. The judge ruled Sykes could be executor until such time as Rozier presented proof of any heir to the estate of Kate Townsend. Once Sykes was allowed to move forward as executor, he immediately broke the law. He arranged to sell number 40 Basin Street to a third party, even though the estate was still in probate. Sykes had this plan in place to have a third party lease the home to Molly Johnson so she could take over Kate's business and ensure the brothel remained open. When the judge heard of Sykes' plan, he immediately removed Sykes as executor. On January 30th, 1884, the murder trial of Bill Sykes began with testimony from Molly Johnson, which proved vital. Sykes had initially pled not guilty, but his attorneys knew that he had a better chance of winning once Molly testified that she heard Kate Townsend threaten to murder Bill Sykes many times, had even warned Bill to hide from Kate when she heard he was in danger. Sykes' attorneys advised him to change his plea to self-defense. Sykes agreed and took the stand in his own defense. He explained what had happened in Kate's room the day she died, made it clear that he believed he would be dead if he had not fought back. The four-day trial ended with a swift jury deliberation. Bill Sykes was found not guilty. For the next 5 years, Bill Sykes would wage many court battles in his attempt to take possession of Kate Townsend's fortune. His attorneys battled the state attorney general request to reduce Bill's claim to Kate's fortune. He requested the amount be reduced to only 10% of Kate's estate because Kate and Bill had never married. Bill and his attorneys also had to face unexpected twists when a woman came forward claiming to be Kate Townsend's niece. The woman claimed Kate was really Catherine Cunningham from Liverpool. And another woman arrived in New Orleans to claim Kate's fortune when she revealed she was Kate's sister. Mrs. Ellen Tully arrived in the city in 1885 and put on quite a show for local papers when she went to Kate Townsend's grave to lay a wreath inscribed to my beloved sister, Bridget Cunningham, from Mrs. Ellen Tully. Both claims would eventually be thrown out when the courts ruled that there was no way to confirm that Bridget Cunningham or Catherine Cunningham were the same woman who arrived in New Orleans and identified herself as Kate Townsend. She had lived and died as Kate Townsend, and there was no proof, no records that were presented to the court to prove otherwise. After years of bickering and battles, Bill Sykes finally had what he wanted. The court ruled Kate's estate was all his. The estate would be settled in 1888. By then, it was valued at about $33,000. Now, expenses and legal fees had to be paid. They amounted to about $30,000. Once Bill Sykes paid court costs, his grand inheritance from the estates of the famous madam, Kate Townsend, was $34. Following Kate Townsend's murder and the settlement of her estate, Molly Johnson would lease number 40 Basin Street. She operated the brothel until she died in 1889. Eventually, everything inside the house would be auctioned, and number 40 Basin Street would be closed until it was purchased by the Elks in 1897. The house was demolished long ago, but the legend of Kate Townsend and her mysterious death at the Bordello on Basin Street remain a part of the dark history of the Big Easy's Vice District. Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. You can see photos of Kate's house along with more about Storyville in the show notes for this episode at southernmysteries.com. Make sure you subscribe to Southern Mysteries, and if you're enjoying the show, I hope you'll share it with friends. Rate it and leave a review wherever you're listening so folks know you think it's worth checking out. You can support the show at southernmysteries.com, where you can also purchase merchandise. Thanks to those of you who have left a tip and are supporting on a monthly basis. Thanks for listening.